Hey everybody, and welcome to Tuesday Night Comics, episode number 59. This is the comic book broadcast, comic book podcast, brought to you by TuesdayNightMovies.com. I'm Billy, and with me, as always, is Dave.
Hey guys.
And today is Tuesday, February 17th, 2015, and we're going to be talking about new comics that are coming out on Wednesday, February 18th. Some cool comics coming out this week, Dave.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff. I think as opposed to last week, there's a bunch of books here that, like, you know, if that you might want to pick up even if you're not, like, a regular in the series.
Yeah, and not only number ones, but just, like, cool issues of books as well.
Right, right.
So why don't we get straight into our recommendations and figure out how are you spending that $20?
Right. Well, I'll jump in first with my first pick is 8 Number 1 by Raphael Albuquerque.
What company is that from?
It's from Dark Horse.
Oh, interesting. He's been previewing art on that on his Instagram for a while now.
Yeah, it looks really cool. And if anybody doesn't know who he is, he does most of the art on the American Vampire series. He's done a lot of work on Blue Beetle and, you know, just various books. But those, I think, are the two that I remember him from.
Yeah, to me, he's synonymous with American Vampire.
Yeah, yeah. So this is This is written and drawn by him, so I'm really interested to see his writer artist debut.
Now, is this an ongoing series or a miniseries?
It's written. It says 8 Number 1 Outcast. So I feel like it might be a series of miniseries. You know, maybe 8 has, like, you know, 8 parts. But that's the first part is called Outcast.
Got it.
So I'm not really sure how it'll be structured, but it seems like at least an ongoing in the way that, like, American Vampire kind of is, where, like, there's, like, it goes in spurts, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it. At least it will have awesome art.
Nice. Yeah, Dark Horse at the end of last year, they lost their Star Wars license to Marvel. But I feel like they're really starting 2015 off with some strong books like this, Lady Killer,
right.
Rat God from last week. They've been showing up in our podcast recommendations every week for like 3 weeks now.
Yeah, so 8 Number 1 is 350. So there's that awkward 50 cents.
But, yeah, the bane of our podcast, that 50 cent piece at the end of the price tag.
Right. And then another fairly large price point that I'm going to go for is The Multiversity, Mastermen Number 1 by Grant Morrison and Jim Lee.
Yes. And I'm very excited for this because I'm a huge Jim Lee fan. I've been loving Multiversity.
Yeah. I'm really excited. I'm a big fan of the Freedom Fighters. I remember when I found one of their books in the back issue quarter bin, and we were like, who are these guys? And, you know, they come from an Earth where the Nazis won World War II. And
we're getting like a Nazi Justice League here, right?
Right, right. That's something that we haven't seen before in Earth-X stuff. So that should be interesting. It's usually just them against the Nazis, but in this twist, we see, like, Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, you know, they're part of their Nazi superheroes. So the Freedom Fighters are fighting against them. But, you know, with those guys working for the Nazis, no wonder they won World War II.
Earth.
I remember... I had purchased one of those Crisis on Multiple Earths trade paperbacks where they collected the old Justice League, Justice Society team-ups, and where they introduced these characters, quality characters. It was an Earth that the Nazis won. They wanted to call it Earth and then have a swastika.
Oh, interesting. And, like, is that why they went with Earth-X?
Well, yeah, because then they were like, somebody at DC was like, ah, no way. No right. way, guys. And then they're like, well, how about Earth X? Which, you know, now, you know, has translated into Earth 10.
That's fascinating. I never knew that.
Yeah, yeah. So that's how they became Earth 10.
Huh. Yeah, I had no clue about that. That's a fascinating story.
Yeah. So,
you're at 850 right now.
Yeah, yeah. After that, I'm going to jump on the Justice League with Jeff Johns and Jason Fabok.
Mm-hmm. That's the last part of the Amazovirus.
Yeah, and this has been a pretty great interpretation of Amazo, and I'm looking forward to the stuff they're doing post-convergence that I'm seeing. I just saw his drawing of what's his name? Metron.
Cool.
And it looks awesome. So I'm really excited about Justice League. It's the only book, it seems, that Jeff Johns is going to be writing in the near future outside of any Earth 1 graphic novels. So if you love Jeff Johns, this is where you get your fix.
Yeah, and especially since he's not going to be diluted over multiple titles, you should be getting some really great stories.
Right. I think it's kind of an edict that he's like, you know, hey, I think he's chief creative officer, so he has to oversee a lot of stuff, and they're like, hey, stop writing and oversee stuff. So I think he's got Justice League, which is great because, you know, that's, you know, I think that's the main DC book that you want to see be awesome. Whenever the Justice League sucks, I feel like DC's not doing good.
That would be like a really interesting infograph. Like if, you know, you go along and right before Grant Morrison took over the Justice League, like the Justice League was in bad shape.
Right.
And DC itself was probably in bad shape. And then that's true. I think I got more interested in the DC universe because of Grant Morrison's Justice League. And then once he left that title and it got like hit or miss, I think DC got a little hit or miss too.
Right, right. I think it's totally like if you've got your strongest creative team on Justice League, usually people are paying attention to your other books.
Yeah, and that's different than at Marvel because like the Avengers are probably the closest to Marvel's version of the Justice League. But while the Justice League is made up of DC's most popular and most well-known characters, the Avengers sort of are now since Wolverine and Spider-Man are on the team, but not necessarily.
Well, yeah, I think once Bendis took over, he said, well, this is supposed to be Marvel's premier team, but the lineup has stuck since, you know, pretty much since Stan and Jack took over them. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, like, you know, like there's been changes, but not a lot. And then he goes, who are the most popular, you know, Marvel characters? Wolverine and Spider-Man. Let's put them on the team. And, you know, I think they...
I remember that there was so much rage when that happened.
Right, you know.
If people were like, Spider-Man's not an Avenger. Wolverine is not an Avenger, even though Spider-Man had been an Avenger a couple of times by that point.
Yeah, yeah. And he had shown up many times in Avengers books.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And so, yeah. So those are... So my other two books...
You're at 850? 1250?
1250.
Yeah, 1250.
So my other two books, I am going with World's End number 20 and Future's End number 42.
And those are $3 each, right?
Yep.
Okay.
And that pretty much rounds out my 1850, and I'm done. I'm done with my 20.
Wow. And it's too bad there's no, like, dollar comic from Dark Horse or Image this week that you could just, like, throw on top of that mix.
I know. I poked around. I was like, I could get so much closer to 20 bucks if there was, like, a dollar book out this week.
Yeah. Give me, like, the Bitch Planet, you know, Image first dollar edition of it.
Right, right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, like you, I'm starting off with Multiversity because, like I said before, this... Grant Morrison and Jim Lee, they could do a book about anything. I will buy whatever that creative team does.
Right.
So that's $5 right there. That it kind of takes a dent into my budget. And then my favorite ongoing DC comic right now, Batgirl number 39, is out with two awesome covers. One is the regular Cameron Stewart cover, where instead of Batgirl of Burnside, they've changed it to Batgirl versus Burnside. And then there's another great cover by Cliff Chang. It's a Harley Quinn cover of Batgirl taking a photo of Harley Quinn on her iPhone. But yeah, has totally reinvigorated the character for me. So that's a must buy for me. So we're up to $8. I'm going to jump down to Marvel. My favorite Marvel comic is also out this week, and that's Ms. Marvel. So I'll be grabbing Ms. Marvel number 12 by the regular creative team of Wilson and Alfona. It's another $3. If people aren't reading Ms. Marvel, they're seriously missing out.
This is true.
So let's see. I'm at $11 now.
I just want to
make sure I don't go over.
That cover is awesome.
To Ms. Marvel?
Yeah, with Loki on it.
Yeah, and she's just got him like wrapped, and it's a Valentine's Day issue. So I think this is going to be a super cool issue.
Yeah,
it's got Loki and his new guys as he's no longer teen Loki. He's like young 20s Loki now. Now here's the thing. Oh, so what am I at? I'm at 11, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 3, 3, 5. Okay. So I'm going up to Image Comics. I'm a fan of the Thrilling Adventure Hour podcast. Mm-hmm. They came out with a graphic novel 2 years ago.
It was
Kickstarter through Arkea, I believe. I could be wrong, or maybe Avatar, one of those two.
Mm-hmm.
And I have that graphic novel. They did a great job on it. They're coming out with a couple of series through Image Comics. The first one is going to be Sparks Nevada, Marshall on Mars, which is one of my favorite stories that they do on Thrilling Adventure Hour. So it's going to be written by Ben Acker and Ben Blacker, who are the regular writers and the creators of the Thrilling Adventure Hour podcast, with art by Jay Bone. So this is another must-buy for me. This is a number one that I'm very excited for.
That's awesome. Jay Bone's great. And we were singing his praises when he was working on Saviors with James Robinson.
Yes.
And that's going to be a great book.
Yeah. It is weird, though, that all the Image books he seems to be working on in the past 6 months take place, in the American Southwest between Saviors and Sparks Nevada. So that brings me up to 15. Now, what sucks is I was looking through what's coming out this week from Marvel. I've got one spot left, which could easily be Silk number 1, the new Spider-Woman, not to be confused with Spider-Gwen, which I believe is coming out next week. Nova looks awesome because Carnage is guest appearing in it. I'm a 1990s comic fanboy. The new issue of Uncanny X-Men has Cyclops versus Havoc and a brother versus brother fight with an awesome cover by Chris Bacalo. So any of those comics normally would go home with me, except that we've got a new issue of Silver Surfer coming out, and this book is amazing. And that is even knocking off Scotty Young's Rocket Raccoon, which is also
Wow. Yeah, that's saying something.
Yeah. And also the final issue of She-Hulk by Charles Soule. It was a tough one, but we've got Silver Surfer fighting Galactus. Galactus on the Mike Allred cover to Silver Surfer number 9, Galactus seems to be doing the squishing your head thing from Kids in the Hall, except he looks like he's squishing Silver Surfer completely. So Silver Surfer coming home at me, that's $19 and I'm spent.
Wow, yeah. There's one more comic I just want to mention because I totally missed it when I was looking at my 20, but we were talking about Flash Gordon and the Phantom starting up under the King brand under Dynamite. And Mandrake the Magician, number 1, who is also part of the Defenders of the Earth team, is also getting a new number 1. And it has an awesome Darwin Cook cover, just like the other two. And it's being written by Roger Langridge and Jeremy Treece. I know nothing of these two people, but I just thought it was worth noting. I'm having a good time talking today.
Yeah, Langridge, he's done a lot of all ages comics. Like he's written for the Adventure Time comic, Angry Birds. He came to prominence, I remember, I can't remember exactly what series it was. I think he had like an Image all ages series that did really well a few years ago, but I could not tell you the name of it.
Yeah, so it looks very cool, and I'm definitely looking to picking these guys up in trade, so definitely worth noting.
Yeah, the other comic that I would say is worth noting is Fables 149, only because Fables is ending at issue 150.
Oh, penultimate really issue.
Because I never buy Fables in individual issues. I just pick up the collections when they come out.
Yeah.
And it saddens me that this isn't something that's just going to continue in perpetuity.
Oh, you know what? I'm kind of glad, because like I stopped reading Fables at some point because I was like, where is this going?
Oh, a lot of people, when I talk to them about Fables, have complained to me that they feel after the Adversary War that the book just kind of like started spinning its wheels. But man, yeah. I love it. Like every time a new graphic novel comes out, I'm like, man, the only thing that sucks is I gotta wait like another 8 months for the next one.
Right, right. Well, you know, that's people wait that long for the next, like, you know, Harry Potter or whatever book your series you're reading to come out. Or, I mean, if you're reading Game of Thrones, you're waiting, like, you know, years and years. So,
that's true.
So, speaking of reading, what did you read this week, Billy?
I went all Star Wars this week. I read Star Wars number 2 by Jason Aaron and John Cassidy. And I read the Darth Vader number 1 that came out last week by Kieran Gillen and Salvador LaRocca.
How was that?
Both of them are excellent. If you're a Star Wars fan, both of these books deserve to be picked up. What was really cool was that I was wondering when the Darth Vader book was going to take place, because the Star Wars comic takes place right after the end of Star Wars. Turns out the Darth Vader comic also does, and Darth Vader number 1 actually ties into Star Wars number 2, because Darth Vader and Luke encounter each other face-to-face for the first time. And there's a really cool scene in Star Wars number 2 where Darth Vader like grabs Luke's lightsaber and realizes that it's his lightsaber, because it's Anakin Skywalker's lightsaber.
Wow.
And so he's completely confused, one, by who Luke is, because he doesn't know that Luke is the rebel pilot who blew up the Death Star. He just knows that some rebel pilot, you know, blew up the Death Star, and he wants to find out who this is, because he senses that the Force is strong in that one. So in Darth Vader number 1, basically Darth Vader is on a quest to find out who this rebel pilot is, and he even hires a couple of bounty hunters. And so here's the thing that I was worried about with Darth Vader. It's a villain, and it's hard to make like a villain comic work, because either you are making him too sympathetic and then like he's not like the badass that he was, you know, that made you love the character.
Right.
Or he's just like too evil, and then you just can't, like, you don't want to root for him anyway.
Right.
Go on.
Oh, I was gonna say those descriptions. I think Deathstroke the Terminator, you know, he got too sympathetic and was not the badass he was after his like almost 100 issue series.
Yeah, and it wasn't until Geoff Johns brought him back in the new Teen Titans series
and killed Wintergreen and like took away his conscience, kind of.
Yeah, and like shot Impulse in the kneecap.
Right. And go ahead.
No, and I was just thinking, I remember like loving that Deathstroke series when it started, and then, you know, just being bored by it by the time it ended.
Right. And I think you're also describing Breaking Bad a little bit, where I think that series struggled, you know, I think halfway through the series with finding relatable characters, you know, as much because they all became so bad that you're like, I don't know where my entry point is here.
Gotcha. What Gillen does really well in Darth Vader number 1 is he basically sets it up to be from Darth Vader's point of view, so that like if you agree with Darth Vader that the Empire is working towards like making the universe more orderly, and that the rebels are messing with that. Like, even in the text piece, you know, like how like the text scroll in a Star Wars movie like catches you up to like what's about, like what just happened.
Yeah.
Like, it's told from the point of view as if like the writer was sympathetic to the Empire.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's a neat way to do it, because I mean, you see, I forget the name of the writer, but he did a series of those books, like the Wicked books, and then he did like one from all the villains and fairy tales. He took their side of the story.
Okay.
I forget, but that's where that Wicked book came from.
Oh, that they based the musical on?
Right.
Gotcha. Yeah, so what was cool about it is it basically sets up Darth Vader as somebody you can relate to, because he's somebody with a jerk boss who you know, is always breathing down his neck and telling him he's doing the things wrong. And then he's also set up almost like a Sam Spade character, because he's trying to work out this mystery of who this rebel pilot was.
Wow.
So he's going on errands for the Emperor, who's pissed at him because he blames Darth Vader on having the Death Star being blown up, and at the same time is working on this own mystery of his own.
Wow. You know what? As you're saying this, I kind of think maybe Marvel acquiring Star Wars was like the best thing for Dark Horse and Marvel, because I feel like status quo of Dark Horse was just churning out Star Wars books that were, you know, good, but like not like eye-catching.
Right.
You know? And now it seems like Dark Horse is just coming out with some really interesting stuff that, you know, is starting to, you know, pique my interest the way that Image has. And Marvel's doing great things with Star Wars, and it's quite a refreshing look at those characters.
Yeah, definitely. And what I really liked about Star Wars number 2, and this is the art, just the thought that went into the art. Like, Luke is running around basically in that yellow leather jacket and like dark pants from the end of Star Wars. But in the Marvel comics from the 1970s and 80s, he was running around like in that white outfit that he wears on Tatooine, which was really like a desert, like farm boy outfit.
Right.
So, like, it makes a lot more sense that he's, now that he's like running around the galaxy, he's in like, you know, boots and like pants and like a cool leather jacket, as opposed to like his karate gi from when he worked on his dad's moisture farm.
Yeah.
And it's such a cooler outfit. I remember even like looking at the John Cassidy cover number 1, I'm like, oh, I'm surprised they went with that choice for Luke. And then reading number 2, I'm like, it just makes so much more sense, because they're not on some desert planet, so he doesn't need to like wear this light colored outfit that's like very loose and, you know, very like flimsy. Yeah. But yeah, so those are the only two books that I read this week, and they were both excellent.
Awesome. Well, I read a bunch of books this week, but two of the books that I think are of note were first, The Five Fists of Science by Matt Fraction and Steven Sanders.
I remember that. So what was that? That's Image, Marvel? What is that?
It's Image. It was a standalone graphic novel that Matt Fraction wrote, and it's like it's loose historical fiction.
Okay.
You've got Mark Twain, Tesla, and J.P. Morgan, and who's the guy who invented the light? The guy who was like the arch enemy
Thomas
of
Edison?
Tesla. Edison, yes.
Yeah, come on, Dave, you live in Jersey.
I know, but I'm a Tesla fan who's also from Jersey.
Okay.
And you would know that if you read this comic. But but basically, he kind of makes the lot of them like superheroes and supervillains. And does it in a clever way, and it's a really fun book and funny book. It's worth a read, but it's definitely not the best of Matt Fraction.
Oh, now this was one of his earliest comics, right?
Yes.
Interesting.
After that, I read Spider-Man Blue by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale.
I love that series. I think that is my favorite of their Marvel color comics.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't read Daredevil in a while, but I read Daredevil Yellow, and I really like that. But as I'm reading, when I was reading Spider-Man Blue, it felt like a snapshot both of like the stories that were being told at that time by Stan Lee,
John Romita
and Steve Ditko.
Okay.
And also like it made it feel like there was a lack of structure to the story. It felt like it felt like you were dropped in the middle of a soap opera, which is kind of like what Spider-Man comics were at the time.
Oh, definitely.
Not having read those books growing up as much as like DC books, I kind of felt like a lack of like.
You weren't anchored the way, like, say I was when I read it.
Right. And it was a good book, and I love how Tim Sale, like, slightly tweaks his style to, you know, to whatever he's doing, and he definitely made it very, sometimes it looked very Ditko-esque, and sometimes it looked John Romita Sr.-esque.
Right.
And it was a really good read, and it was a quick read, and if anyone's looking at, like, what happened with like Peter Parker, Mary Jane, Gwen Stacy back then. Like, it's a great book to read to like kind of catch you up on your Marvel history. And but it almost felt like it was a summary of what happened back then.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's almost like it. I think Jeff Loeb once described it as like his love letter to Gwen Stacy. Because of the, that came out around the time of this, like the first two Spider-Man movies.
Right.
So Gwen Stacy had kind of been, it wasn't like she was getting erased from Spider-Man history, but to the public at large, Mary Jane was now the one that the Green Goblin throws off the bridge and
right.
Spider-Man saves her in the movie. It's not as tragic an ending as what happened to Gwen Stacy in the comic. And he was, I remember reading an interview where he said like that comic was his way of making sure that people didn't forget about Gwen Stacy.
Yeah. And I feel like Mary Jane takes a beating in the comic as far as like personality wise.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if that's how she was originally written or not, or just like he's like, no, you know, like this is his like Betty versus Veronica, and he's like, no, all Veronica.
Mary Jane was much flightier in the 1970s, like when she first appeared.
Yeah.
And then like even how she was after they got married, you know, like she was the consummate like party girl, and you know, dated Peter and dated Harry.
And I think a little Jeff Love definitely took the writing style of the 60s when he wrote that book a little bit too, where he would have Mary Jane like have catchphrases, like,
right.
And it would take me out of the story a little bit. I kind of like his Batman and Superman books. I don't feel like he like mimicked a style of a writer, and I feel like that might not have been the greatest choice of his to do in here, you know?
Yeah.
It definitely goes, oh, he's mimicking the 60s style in here and stuff, saying, this is how Jeff Loeb writes, you know?
Yeah. So speaking of Spider-Man, like right after we recorded last week's podcast, we get the huge news that that Sony and Marvel have signed a deal and Spider-Man is coming to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Right, that's exciting.
What are your thoughts on this?
I like it, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean as far as Marvel movies go, like the ones that are doing good are the ones that, you know, Marvel is, you know, has a hand in, you know.
Yeah, the Marvel Studios movies are head and shoulders above what Sony is putting out and what Fox is putting out.
Right. And so I am excited that Kevin Feige or Feige has the creative control over Spider-Man again.
Mm.
Or I don't know if again is the right word, but he has creative control over the Spider-Man movies, and that they're kind of washing away what was done with these last two Spider-Man movies. Not that they were bad movies by any means, but I'm glad they're not trying to shoehorn them into the Marvel universe.
Definitely. The only bad news I see out of this is that Andrew Garfield is no longer Spider-Man. Like, I thought he was a great Peter Parker and a great Spider-Man. Like, I love the way he played the character. He had, like, the comic timing down, which I think is very important to Spider-Man. Unfortunately, he was a great Peter Parker and a great Spider-Man in two not great movies. Like, the script, the special effects, like, the villains in both movies looked so cheesy to me, like, and I didn't enjoy really either of the Amazing Spider-Man movies.
I liked the first one. The second one I felt was a little bit of a mess.
I thought any scenes you had with Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone were great, but then once you had Spider-Man, like, fighting the lizard, who just looked super cheesy to me, they made him look like a salamander, and then in the second movie, like, Harry Osborn was just like, it looked like they were like, oh, let's base the Green Goblin on Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, which nothing should ever be based on Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
I hear you. So there's a lot of, like, speculation flying around. Maybe we won't see a Peter Parker. Maybe Peter Parker's time will have come and gone, and Miles Morales will be the Spider-Man in this movie.
There's an idea that the first time I saw it was Riley Brown had posted it on his Facebook page, and I've actually seen it getting traction, like, in other news outlets. This was an idea that it seemed Riley Brown was the first I saw that came up with it, but now others are, you know, speculating on it too. Since Spider-Man is going to be in Civil War, the next Captain America movie, and a pivotal part of that is Spider-Man unmasking to the public, that we won't actually know who is playing Spider-Man. They're going to keep it under wraps until that unmasking scene in the movie. And if Marvel can pull that off, that would be the coolest thing in the world, because you wouldn't know if it was Peter Parker or Miles Morales underneath that mask.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, but it requires a level of secrecy that I don't know they're able to pull off, you know, with the internet these days.
Yeah, that's going to be really, really tough.
But that would be amazing and spectacular. I'm only using Spider-Man adjectives. It would be ultimate.
Well, yeah. That would be really, really cool. That would be great.
Yeah, like, imagine, like, that would, you know, it. Spider-Man, the Captain America 3 is probably going to sell out in movie theaters regardless of that. But that would just make it like you have to be the first to see this because you do not want that spoiled.
Yeah. I feel like that would be, like, you know, like, maybe 2 days before it's going to get spoiled.
Right.
And so, like, I would stay away from the internet.
Yeah. Like, that, but that really would turn the movie into an event.
Yeah. To get there, to get and see it, have nobody tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be great.
So I think we're both in agreement. Like, Spider-Man coming to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, great for Marvel, great for Spider-Man.
Yeah, totally.
Now, if only Marvel could get their hands on Wolverine. You know what? They could keep the rest of the X-Men at Fox, just get, like, some kind of sharing deal that Wolverine can appear in the Avengers, and if they make any more Wolverine movies, like, solo Wolverine movies, Fox is not allowed to do that because those movies have been terrible. Those are the worst X-Men movies are the solo Wolverine movies.
Yeah, that's what makes me worried about this Deadpool movie and Gambit movie. I feel like they're just going to be awful too.
Yeah, I'm hopeful for the Deadpool movie. Like, if they can capture the character right, but yeah, that's a very good point. I would be much more excited for the Deadpool movie if it was coming from Marvel Studios.
Right.
Though I do think it was strong casting to keep Ryan Reynolds in the role, because I think he could be a very funny Deadpool.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, and let's just pretend that first Wolverine movie never happened. Yeah. All right, so I guess that brings us to the end of this week's episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everybody, go out, enjoy your comic book reading. Where if you're in the Northeast, you're suffering through a very cold winter with us. You know, if you're enjoying this podcast, please subscribe to it on iTunes and go into iTunes and leave us a review. We read any reviews that are written on there. And enjoy your Tuesday night, everyone. See you next week.